Shadow shrugged. They spent the night in a Super 8 motel south of La Crosse. Christmas Day was spent on the road driving north and east. The farmland became pine forest. The town seemed to come farther and farther apart. They ate their Christmas lunch late in the afternoon in a hall-like family restaurant in northern central Wisconsin. Shadow picked cheerlessly at the dry turkey, jam-sweet red lumps of cranberry sauce, tough-as-wood roasted potatoes, and the violently green canned peas. From the way he attacked it and the way he smacked his lips, Wednesday seemed to be enjoying the food. As the meal progressed, he became positively expansive, talking, joking, and whenever she came close enough, flirting with the waitress, a thin blonde girl who looked scarcely old enough to have dropped out of high school.
"Excuse me, my dear, but might I trouble you for another cup of your delightful hot chocolate? And I trust you won't think me too forward if I say what a mightily fetching and becoming dress that is. Festive, yet classy."
The waitress, who wore a bright red and green skirt edged with glittering silver tinsel, giggled and colored and smiled happily, and went off to get Wednesday another mug of hot chocolate.
"Fetching,"
said Wednesday, thoughtfully, watching her go.
"Becoming."
Shadow did not think he was talking about the dress. Wednesday shoveled the final slice of turkey into his mouth, flicked at his beard with his napkin, and pushed his plate forward.
"Ah, good."
He looked around him at the family restaurant. In the background, a tape of Christmas songs was playing. The little drummer boy had no gifts to bring. Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum.
"Some things may change,"
said Wednesday abruptly.
"People, however, stay the same. Some grifts last forever. Others are swallowed soon enough by time and by the world. My favorite grift of all is no longer practical. Still, a surprising number of grifts are timeless. The Spanish prisoner, the pigeon drop, the fawny rig, that's the pigeon drop but with a gold ring instead of a wallet, the fiddle game."
"I've never heard of the fiddle game. I think I've heard of the others. My old cellmate said he'd actually done the Spanish prisoner. He was a grifter."
"Ah, the fiddle game was a fine and wonderful con. In its purest form, it is a two-man grift. It trades on cupidity and greed, as all great grifts do. You can always cheat an honest man, but it takes more work. So, we are in a hotel, or an inn, or a fine restaurant, and dining there we find a man, shabby, but shabby genteel. Not down at heel, but certainly down on his luck. We shall call him Abraham. And when the time comes to settle this bill, not a huge bill, you understand, $50, $75, an embarrassment. Where is his wallet? Good Lord, he must have left it at a friend's, not far away. He shall go and obtain his wallet forthwith. But here, mine host, says Abraham, take this old fiddle of mine for security. It's old, as you can see, but it's how I make my living."
Wednesday's smile when he saw the waitress approaching was huge and predatory.
"Ah, the hot chocolate, brought to me by my Christmas angel. Tell me, my dear, could I have some more of your delicious bread when you get a moment?"
The waitress, what was she, Shadow wondered, 16, 17, looked at the floor and her cheeks flushed crimson. She put down the chocolate with shaking hands and retreated to the edge of the room by the slowly rotating display of pies, where she stopped and stared at Wednesday. Then she slipped into the kitchen to fetch Wednesday his bread.
"So, the violin, old, unquestionably, perhaps even a little battered, is placed away in its case, and our temporarily impecunious Abraham sets off in search of his wallet. But a well-dressed gentleman, only just done with his own dinner, has been observing this exchange, and now he approaches our host. Could he, perchance, inspect the violin that honest Abraham left behind? Certainly he can. Our host hands it over, and the well-dressed man, let us call him Barrington, opens his mouth wide, then remembers himself and closes it, examines the violin reverentially, like a man who has been permitted into a holy sanctum to examine the bones of a prophet. Why, he says, this is... It must be. No, it cannot be. But yes, there it is, my lord. This is unbelievable.
And he points to the maker's mark on a strip of browning paper inside the violin. But still, he says, even without it, he would have known it by the color of the varnish, by the scroll, by the shape.
Now Barrington reaches inside his pocket and produces an engraved business card, proclaiming him to be a preeminent dealer in rare and antique musical instruments. So this violin is rare? Asks mine host. Indeed it is, says Barrington, still admiring it with awe, and worth in excess of $100,000, unless I miss my guess. Even as a dealer in such things, I would pay $75,000, good cash money, for such an exquisite piece. I have a man on the West Coast who would buy it tomorrow, sight unseen, with one telegram, and pay whatever I asked for it. And then he consults his watch, and his face falls. My train, he says. I have scarcely enough time to catch my train. Good sir, when the owner of this inestimable instrument should return, please give him my card, for alas, I must be away. And with that, Barrington leaves, a man who knows that time and the train wait for no man. Mine host examines the violin, curiosity mingling with cupidity in his veins, and a plan begins to bubble up through his mind. But the minutes go by, and Abraham does not return. And now it is late, and through the door, shabby but proud, comes our Abraham, our fiddle player, and he holds in his hands a wallet that has seen better days, a wallet that has never contained more than $100 on its best day, and from it he takes the money to pay for his meal or his stay, and he asks for the return of his violin. Mine host puts the fiddle in its case on the counter, and Abraham takes it like a mother cradling her child. Tell me, says the host, with the engraved card of a man who'll pay $50,000 good cash money burning in his inside breast pocket, how much is a violin like this worth? For my niece has a yearning on her to play the fiddle, and it's her birthday coming up in a week or so. Sell this fiddle, says Abraham. I could never sell her. I've had her for 20 years, I have. Fiddled all over the country with her. And to tell the truth, she cost me all of $500 back when I bought her. Mine host keeps the smile from his face. $500? What if I were to offer you $1,000 for it, here and now? The fiddle player looks delighted, then crestfallen, and he says, But lordy, I'm a fiddle player, sir. It's all I know how to do. This fiddle knows me, and she loves me, and my fingers know her so well I could play an air upon her in the dark. Where will I find another that sounds so fine? $1,000 is good money, but this is my livelihood. Not $1,000, not for $5,000. Mine host sees his profit shrinking. But this is business, and you must spend money to make money. $8,000, he says. It's not worth that. But I've taken a fancy to it, and I do love and indulge my niece. Abraham is almost in tears at the thought of losing his beloved fiddle. But how can he say no to $8,000, especially when mine host goes to the wall safe and removes not eight, but $9,000, all neatly banded and ready to be slipped into the fiddle player's threadbare pocket? You're a good man, he tells his host. You're a saint, but you must swear to take care of my girl. And reluctantly, he hands over his violin.
But what if mine host simply hands over Barrington's card and tells Abraham that he's come into some good fortune?
Then we're out the cost of 2 dinners.
He wiped the remaining gravy and leftovers from his plate with a slice of bread, which he ate with lip-smacking relish.
Let me see if I've got it straight. So Abraham leaves, $9,000 the richer, and in the parking lot by the train station, he and Barrington meet up. They split the money, get into Barrington's Model A Ford, and head for the next town. I guess in the trunk of that car, they must have a box filled with $100 violins.
I personally made it a point of honor never to pay more than $5 for any of them,
said Wednesday. Then he turned to the hovering waitress.
Now, my dear, regale us with your description of the sumptuous desserts available to us on this, our Lord's natal day.